There are fewer than 100,000 or so in all. Yet the whale still faces hazards, collisions with ships, for example, and loss of food from overfishing. So the fin whale is still an endangered species, a little-known giant fighting for survival. For the University of Texas Marine Science Institute, I'm Holly Brawley.
KCAA Loma Linda. Listen on 1050 AM, 102.3 FM, and 106.5 FM.
KCAA Radio has openings for one-hour talk shows. If you want to host a radio show, now is the time. Make KCAA your flagship station. Our rates are affordable and our services are second to none. We broadcast on three terrestrial frequencies to a population of 5 million people. Plus, we stream and podcast on all major online audio and video systems. If you've been thinking about broadcasting a weekly radio program on real radio plus the internet, contact our CEO at 281-599-9800. You can Skype your show from your home to our Redlands, California studio, where our live producers and engineers are ready to work with you personally. A radio program on KCAA is the perfect work from home avocation in these stressful times. Just type kcaaradio.com into your browser to learn more about hosting a show on the best station in the nation, or call our CEO for details. 281-599-9800.
You're listening to an encore presentation of this program, KCAA, the Inland Talk Express.
What's up, team? This is Robert Porter with the I Love San Bernardino County Radio Show on KCAA NBC 106.5 FM, 102.3 FM, 1050 AM, where we will talk politics, culture, and history. We have a great show today, team. I honestly, I'm really looking forward to it. We're going to be focusing here on community gardens and in San Bernardino and stuff like that. And we got Councilwoman Kimberly Calvin in the house today. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for the invite.
Yeah, my good friend Kevin Head's over there, loving San Bernardino, and they both have their special attributes to helping community gardens. But we're also going to be talking about the Coma Center and what's going on in the community over there in the 6th Ward with our kids. And I've seen a lot of good projects coming out of there. So before we get into that stuff, though, I want to talk a little bit about some stuff that's happening in the community. Now, we just had Community Dump Day over at Paris Hill Park. But the next one is September 24th at San Manuel Stadium, 280 Southeast Street. And you can, it's for San Bernardino City residents only, and you can take on water items like appliances, mattresses, tires, furniture, tree limbs, electronic waste. This is for household refuse only. Be prepared to show proof of residency with a driver's license or a gas, electric, water bill. No hazardous materials, no construction materials, and no commercial vehicles, team. If you have more questions, call 909-384-7272. And then the one after that will be October 29th at Blair Park, and we'll finish off the year November 19th back at Paris Hill Park. So I saw some video of the one that happened last weekend. It went very well. Sounds like a lot of people got rid of their junk.
But we're still seeing way too many mattresses.
Oh, yes.
Being dumped within the community. And that's still not cool.
Yes, honestly, I wish we could do like DNA tests on all that trash or fingerprints and see if it's all coming from Fontana or Colton or up in the mountains. Because I do know for a fact that people drive down the mountains and they don't get trash, so they just throw their trash right there at the base of the mountain, right there.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, that's
horrible. So like use this team. We can use this.
Please.
And then we'll, you know, maybe we'll get on working on the DNA testing for the trash.
Yeah. just take it to the dump.
In those cleanups, one time I went around and took pictures of all the Coke, McDonald's, Baker's, all the different groups that trash were actually littering in. And I'm thinking there should be a special tax on them for creating all this trash too. It's not fair for them to get all this extra advertising.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, is that what you call it?
So, how do I request city services?
Yay.
See a pothole that needs filling, graffiti, broken sprinklers, illegal dumping? Online, you can go to sbcity.org/sbaccess, or you can get the mobile app at GoSBCity. Open the app, select your issue, and take a picture and send it, which I have done, and they fixed
it
within a couple days.
It works.
Or you can call the city directly, 909-384-7272, Monday through Thursday, 7:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. And on Friday, 7:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. And this works, team.
Yes.
But if we don't report the graffiti, if we don't report the encampments, this is 64 square miles. It's huge.
And just this week, I've been able to say thank you to the graffiti team. I caught them in the Sixth Ward doing some work, and I had to get out my car to say, hey, thank you guys. Took a picture with them really quick.
Yeah.
And then also, just today, I stopped in the company that we utilize called CEO. Those folks, some of them right from right here in San Bernardino, they were cleaning off some fields and some areas too. These folks are out here every single day in the heat, you know, doing a good job for the community. So it's just really unfair for us to just turn right back around and put litter and debris and all of that rubbish inside of back.
Or let those graffiti
community.
Artists. Now, I did mention about the graffiti artists. I'm not going to mention the people that think they're famous in the city for doing it, but at our neighborhood association meetings, I mentioned to Lieutenant Fivey that we need to get back into the team that goes after taggers. And they used to go after them. They had a whole team that just went through there. They would take pictures of their graffiti, then take it back and get pictures of the same graffiti at their house for the court cases. So, like, there was ways to actually, you know, cut down on that stuff. But now it's just like you put it up, it goes right back up. It's a constant thing I hear in the neighborhood association meeting, the bad graffiti. And our graffiti team, oh, I love them. They're really
cool
cats.
They are cool.
Whenever I see them, I'll stop by and give them a little play on I Love San Bernardino. And they know who I am, so we all give them high fives.
That's
They're very
right.
good people.
That's right. You got to say thank you.
Yeah. And then what's the team, that the police team that cleans up everything? What is it called again? The
Quality of Life
team. Yeah.
Yes,
I try to take
too.
Pictures of them too.
Absolutely. So we have a lot of organizations, a lot of folks that are getting out here every single day. And that's why I find it just, you know, really hurts me personally that when we just don't appreciate the folks that are taking that extra effort to help out around the city.
Yeah. Can you imagine, you know, cleaning up an encampment and there's fecal matter, buckets filled with it, fecal matter all through the dirt and everything. And they have to rake this stuff up. And, you know, it's terrible what they have to go through. So, you
not
know, thank them,
and
you know.
Not just encampments, but when we just find mattresses on the corner. You
yeah,
know
that,
what
that's
saying?
Terrible too.
Like,
yeah.
That's
or
just,
a desk, this errant desk,
your
or
whole,
a chair.
Or your whole
yeah.
love seat that you yeah. don't want any longer. Like, dispose of it properly. We don't want it either.
Yeah, please try to keep San Bernardino clean. All right. Oh, well, we got a little San Bernardino history tidbit. So I did a little research on newspapers.com. And so if you guys have never used newspapers.com, you can use it for free for 7 days. So say you had something you wanted to look up that was specific and you have 7 days to do it. Then it costs money after that. But you can opt out after. But, you know, I opt in, of course, because I like to look up our little bits of history. So today I put in, since we're talking about community gardens, I put in community gardens.
Mm.
And I put the earliest newspapers that we could find. So at first I found that in like after 1917 and a little bit before, in World War I, they wanted to help the war effort in their way. Now, it happened again in World War II. It was called Victory Gardens. But in World War I, they also started this movement of having community gardens all across the nation. And it was a way to, you know, because trade wasn't as rampant.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, they wanted to provide food for everybody. And they also wanted to provide food for veterans coming home that needed help and people that were in dire straits. Then later on in the 20s, right, well, we all know that eventually we had the crash. We had the Great Depression. So another community garden movement happened to put people to work. So they would put people to work in these community gardens to create food for everybody else. Mm-hmm. Then in well, go ahead. You got that over there, Kevin? You want to read?
So, yeah, this is what Robert wrote on his Facebook page. Yeah. You want to see it there? But so in San Bernardino, Mayor Gilbert and council used city workers and the Citizens Emergency Relief Committee to prepare a community garden at St. Bernardine's Hospital in January 1937.
So that was the first time that I actually found the city involved in a community garden, right?
Okay.
So I thought it was pretty cool. And I actually just recently posted up pictures of St. Bernardine's Hospital in that area. And believe it or not, all around it, there was some houses, but it was mostly fields. Especially where my house is, there was just fields there. Like it was like a... like look like you could have cows or something there. Mm. So there was plenty of room to have community gardens, and what Mayor Gilbert wanted, and he had to convince the council to be able to use city workers to do this. They went out there and graded it, got it ready, and then the food helped provide resources for the poor in our community. So I thought that was awesome, and
it was
a good way to start. And I was born at St. Bernardine, so I have an extra special connection to it, you know.
I was born in Deal County.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Where were you born, Kevin?
At San Bernardino.
So. Okay.
Two wins.
Two to one. What about you?
All Corona.
Eric was born in Corona, but it's okay. You don't have a name for your hospital?
Oh,
yeah. Man, we'll adopt you at St. Bernardine. So we got three.
No.
Yeah.
Old County. You got two.
So
he's too young for the Old County.
So the community gardens have been a movement that have been going on for a long time. Now, of course, the Native Americans have had their own gardens to help supplement their peoples, and then the Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, or in historically termed the Mormons, they had their own gardens inside our Fort San Bernardino, and then later on had them outside of Fort San Bernardino once they found out that there was not going to be any Native American uprisings or anything that they were scared of, which I never thought I was going to have in the first place. But they still built a fort, and they put wheat fields and different things all around the city. And that's what they used to feed their community. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm sure there was churches and home gardens and maybe even some neighborhood gardens in the past that I haven't found any historical reference to yet. But it's a good start. So now if they could do it back then, we can do it right now.
We are doing it right now.
Yes, we are. So let's start off with a Coma Center, of course. We'll start with the kindergarten, and then later on in the show, we'll talk about some of the other things we're
doing.
Okay,
wonderful. So with all due respect to this gentleman to my left, Kevin Head, who is our master gardener at Acoma Unity Center and has taught us so many things. The garden was part of our vision from the beginning. So 6 years ago when we moved into that space, we knew that that's what we wanted. But it was already a garden there like in 2018 and in 2008, and it just died off. It was being kept by some community members, but also a teacher at Rio who is still there, matter of fact.
And it did have a grapefruit tree still.
There's the grapefruit tree and a lemon tree, which they have kind of crossed.
Yeah.
So there's some of the sweetest grapefruits that you ever did want to taste, because there's a cross between a lemon and a grapefruit.
Good stuff.
And it's a great piece of fruit. Sometimes things of this nature kind of get tasking for community. And the teacher at Rio said he was a little bit tired, and it kind of just went to the wayside. But it was always part of our plan to create a community garden there for the community to be able to harvest and eat off of. So we were then fortunate to receive some funding from MAC Foundation, More Attractive Communities. And that's what we wanted to do, is to create the community garden. So in partnership with the city, because that property does belong to them. We just rent from them. We were able to, once COVID began to ease up, get in there and begin our community garden. But that's after, you know, everything, irrigation and...
Well, it started off in the fenced-in area.
It is in the fenced-in.
But then it grew.
Yes, to across the way where our building is. And so Kevin started a garden on the other side. And now we have grown probably, what, 40 different types of... fruits and vegetables, you think? I don't know.
Name some of them. What are you growing over there, Kevin?
So much. Yeah, carrots, tomatoes,
Crenshaw melons,
zucchinis,
squash,
Crenshaw melons, watermelons,
eggplant,
chives,
strawberries,
basil.
Strawberries. Those are a lot of fun.
A whole pumpkin.
So I took some kids over there, and. They were all just—they're picking all kinds of strawberries. I mean, some weren't even ripe. I was like, "Hey,
we have okra. We did the yellow gold potatoes.
Yeah, we brought some potatoes.
We had kale.
Cabbage. Collards.
Collards. We had collards.
My favorite.
What else? What are we missing?
Let me think. Did we say onions?
And
there's a few fruit trees too. Like, is there an apple?
The plums were great. Yeah. We're eating apples now.
Just started harvesting apples.
Yeah. Cassava melons.
Is that? Oh, we have the Crenshaw.
Okay. Watermelon.
Yeah. Get some
cantaloupe.
Everything you'd see in the store. I mean, there's a
lot
of land.
Sweet potatoes are in the ground now.
I did see you planting some asparagus too, right?
Oh, yeah.
Did you? You didn't tell me that.
Yeah,
okay.
It takes a while to come up,
yeah,
but
it takes a little while. Once it gets established, you can start cutting off some of those tips.
We've learned a lot of things. So it was from picking some of the okra, and I took it to some of our elders in the community, and they said, "You're letting this grow too long. It's not supposed to be this tall. You're supposed to cut them off when they're just about 2 inches or less, not as large as we've been growing
them." The big old ones, yeah.
Yeah, they said it becomes really tough to cook down, and it doesn't do it. I'm like, okay, we learned that now. Yeah. So we're just working on, what about the sunflower seeds? The scholars just this weekend
were able
to harvest the sunflower seeds. Like amazing things that the community is being able
to
grow.
When a kid actually gets to get in their hands in the dirt and do this stuff, if they remember and have nostalgia for it later. Yeah. I remember in at Riley Elementary, we made Brussels sprouts. Mm. That's what. So we grew them in the classroom, right? In a little container.
Still,
right?
Yes. Yeah.
But then we got to put them in our own salad, and the teacher brought us, some salad dressing, and we thought it was the best thing ever.
Well, we started growing food first indoors using the garden towers, so the tower gardens. And we did all kind of leafy greens there, tomatoes, and we would make allow the scholars to make their own salads or smoothies. And then that was just, while we were waiting to finally end up, putting some food into the ground to be able to harvest for them. So we started with little, little seedlings.
Those are skills. You're planting seeds and you're planting brain seeds, and these brain seeds will grow. Like, hopefully all these kids will have gardens and teach their kids.
Well, they've taken home pots, right? We've created some of our Earth Day. They took home little seedlings
and
pots.
Free tree giveaway.
A free tree giveaway. And
we
you
actually
can grow
have
that
two,
on your patio.
Two of those trees planted at Amy's house, an apricot and a peach. That was super cool.
Very, very cool. I think that is something that connects community, because we have actually seen on harvest days, which is our Tuesdays and Saturdays, three generations in one family that are in there working the earth. If you think about it, kids that live, in inner cities just don't have this type of opportunity to place their hands in the dirt, right? To get allowed to get dirty. And then to be able to connect with Mother Earth. And we think that it's very, very important. It's therapeutic.
Touch it.
Quite therapeutic, and it's very rewarding for them to be able to say, "I grew this, right? I did this. This is mine."
Before we get too far ahead, who else is helping you with the garden, Kevin? I know it's a whole team. There's a whole team doing other the logistics outside, and you want to throw a couple names out?
What's Sam's last name?
Sam, man, I should know. He's said it so many times.
But anyway, hey, Sam. Sam helps out at the Garcia Center in their garden as well. So we got a lot of friends from all over.
And you have a whole team at Acoma. So we're props to the whole team at Acoma, right? Props to everybody. So we don't forget anyone's name.
And all the community that comes out.
And what I was going to say is that the workers, too, they learn, right? When you see this stuff, it's not just the kids. It's the workers learning too, and that's important as well. And then the parents that come, they learn too. It's like a huge education like wave that comes out of these gardens, these community gardens, especially when you're involving the kids.
And the feeling of being able to share, I think that's what's most gratifying. Oh, yeah. I've taken food down to City Hall, shared with some of the city staff. I've been on other campuses with principals. We've shared food there. And then when we did our orientation for this school year's new staff members coming on to Acoma, every morning I sliced up cucumbers and tomatoes and served them a breakfast that had something natural, something healthy that came right out of our very own garden.
And those Armenian cucumbers.
That's what we forgot
incredible.
To
yeah. Amy made a salad with those and we took it up to Northern California, had it for a picnic and
I saw those online. Yeah. We served that. That was something I've never heard of an Armenian cucumber before, nor had I ever
seen it.
It was good. It's very, very good. Yeah, it is. So we've done a lot. Yeah. And thanks to this guy right here who continues to teach us about irrigation. I mean, when you're in a garden, it really is school, right? Everybody's learning, and there are things and that's why we have the outdoor chairs, benches to be placed inside of the garden, because that becomes our outdoor classroom. And
plants are good teachers. They will tell you really quickly if they ain't liking what's going on.
Right? Yeah. Or too much water.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, you like too much water, too much fertilizer.
The heat. What about the heat?
Yeah, or not
the
enough
heat.
Water.
Kind of taking our plants, you know, not the last several weeks. It's been quite hot.
So when you do have the fruits of your labor, like, right in front of you and you get to eat them, it's almost like they taste better.
I go out into the garden all the time and pop those cherry tomatoes. Cherry tomatoes are my favorite. I don't like the large ones. I always like the smaller tomatoes.
So
I go in the garden, just pop a few. Sometimes it just makes me feel so good.
And you can grow. Me and Amy have been growing cherry tomatoes right in front of the house, right in a regular black pot, from one of the garden centers, you know, and it produced probably like 300 tomatoes so far.
But shout out to San Bernardino's Urban Gardens too. I mean, that organization, you guys do great work there too, and I'm always following you all and seeing what you guys are sharing amongst each other too. And so thank you for sharing your figs with me. You guys have shared some tomatoes with me.
Yeah, that was Amy's hard work with the figs right there. But basically what Urban Gardens was over, we started about 10 years ago. It was me, Neona Rose, and a guy named Ken Schultz, who took over for Neona after she passed away. And we have a few other members that have been consistently coming, like Nadine Cheney, and they here and there, and we just kept going. And we have a thing called a crop swap, but it's actually turned into more of a social kind of thing.
I see you guys. Yeah, I keep saying I'm going to come join you on Saturday.
So I like, since when I went to graduate school at Cal State, I took my graduate school money and I bought plants from all over the world just to see if they would grow in San Bernardino. Because we have one of the best climates to grow things. It's almost Mediterranean. So I planted all these plants, and I wanted – all these books tell you this and that and everything, but they're usually books from some other part of the United States or the state. Yeah. So I wanted to know, you know, don't tell me what I can grow. I want to try it myself. And now I know what will grow in San Bernardino. And it's pretty much almost everything. There's a few when you get started into the desert end of the spectrum. Sometimes a few of those won't grow. And then if you get to the chill hour ones, like certain berry plants and cherries and things, they're not as good either. So there are a few, but it's like there's way more that you can grow.
Hey, we forgot dill, and we forgot basil.
Basil.
And we took off some avocados a couple of days ago, and they were very, very good. Yeah, we had some avocados.
Yeah, avocados grow well in San Bernardino.
So I would like to see some berries or some grapes or something like that. But the only thing about that is that the kids are constantly picking them before they're all the way ripe. I was like, quit letting the kids take the strawberries. They're not ripe.
Yeah, look. grapes might be good over there because you have a lot of fences. So, like, you grapes end up taking just the side of the fence. You
so
know?
We're taking our show on the road here, and so Kevin has already been over to Devil Ayo Middle School. Then we're going to be over there assisting them too. They have this already this plot, and I've just put in an order for the supplies, and we're getting ready to get started over there to build a community garden that over there on that part of town. The scholars over there really need. I think it could be very therapeutic. And I think that it will bring a community together. And
a sense of accomplishment.
And
once,
a sense
when,
of accomplishment.
Yeah, when you get food, you're like, wow, we grew this.
And absolutely.
The kids go right home and tell their parents, you know. And I don't care what kind of parent, what you're interested in. You always like to hear that your kid grew food because we all need food to survive.
We do it. And in COVID, we realized that, right? Mm-hmm. That first Thanksgiving, there were no collard greens in the store. And I was like, what? So now growing our own collard greens, and that's a plant that continues to give and give and give.
Oh, yeah, they'll give for years if you let them.
We had some scholars that were taking them home, and I'll never forget the little boy. He's on our Facebook page, and he was like, my grandfather's going to love these. He cooks collard greens all the time. So the connection there, right, that he was actually taking something home that he grew to his grandfather to cook for him, that was just, I'll never forget that one, that moment.
And Kevin's great-great-great-grandfather, right?
Sounded like that.
Yeah, like the first mayor of San Bernardino, they actually grew...
I didn't know that. You didn't share that one.
Well, I guess it never came up.
Wow, okay, bro.
Yeah, so he's got a lot of history, and they had to grow food to survive. There was no they weren't bringing that in that much food from the outside. They were growing it all on their own. So it easily humans can go back to that. And that would be scary, but it's good to learn these skills for survival too.
Yeah, my family comes from Texarkana, Arkansas, on my mother's side, where we still have over 400 acres, and that is what they do. They grew their own food, have their own animals and everything. And so I have some family that still live on the land that are still harvesting a few things like pecans. We have lots of pecan trees on the I know, right? So, but it's not a lot of us still down there to harvest the land, and you know, most folks are here in the city. But because we didn't grow up there on the farm, that now I'm really just beginning to get a taste of what that kind of life is like. And I don't know if I'm ready to go yet and take up home.
It's a hard work life, but
I have an uncle there who's almost 80. No, he is 80, and he does it every single day. And I believe that it probably is adding to his life because
it's a
good hard workout, like every single day, right?
Yeah, like I have an orchard and it kicks my butt back there. Let me tell you, like, cutting those branches and everything, you can't let them get too tall. And if you let them get too crazy, they take over other plants. So it's a lot of work, but, like, after you're done, you're like, oh,
that's an
accomplishment.
Good, huh?
Yeah, I'm feeling good about it. So, Kevin, you're also a specialist when it comes to composting, right?
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about composting.
So
right into that microphone right there.
Sorry, but so... I guess I've been composting about 10 years. Like, it was just naturally something I'm fascinated in. But I've been doing it as a job for a little over 1 year now with this group called Community Composting Green Spaces. And, compost about four different places. And mostly we get food from these food distribution places, which is really cool. Like, they're starting
to... So it's not always, like... fertilizer or poop or nothing. It's fresh food. That's
organic.
That would normally just go into the dumpster.
Yeah, not too long ago this stuff was just going straight from, you know, like Stater Brothers to a landfill, and now there's a few food distribution places that get that food where, you know, the store doesn't want to sell it anymore, but it's still good, so they just give people an opportunity to pick up free food. Then whatever's left over then also gets composted, and
so there's little waste.
Yeah,
and that really helps the environment, and you know, like, hope, you know, you probably could plant some of those seeds too from like the strawberries and stuff.
We have before. We a couple of times we got a really big thing of garlic and a big thing of ginger, and we did use some of that to like start our own.
If you've ever had like tomatoes go bad and you know, like, yeah, cherry tomatoes that has been there too long, or tomato that You could take those seeds and plant them, and I've had them grow and produce fruit a lot of times. Or you have berries that went bad, especially strawberries. You can get a little mold on them, and you don't want to eat them. I just mash those up in dirt right on the top, put some water on them, and the seeds will grow.
Yeah, well, we've been composting at Acoma as well. So sometimes in the heat, I walk out there, and I'm like, oh, my God, that smell, right? But we've been composting. The children are
smells like veggies.
Yeah, it smells like food.
Yep.
So the scholars have been learning about composting as well, too, due to Kevin.
So where you work at several community gardens, right, Kevin? Where else you doing? You have a plot over at the Third Street Garden too.
Yeah, the Garden of Health on Third Street in Tippecanoe. It's a great place. Yeah, it's like $35 I think still a year for a 10x20
for a whole year. That's
a lot for
the
whole year.
Yeah,
and think how much food you can grow right there.
Yeah, so, 10x20 plot.
Yeah, so what do you grow out there? Like the other day, you brought us some crazy. Crazy chilies, and Amy chomped one of those down. Tell us what are you growing over there?
So right now it is almost all really hot chilies.
Super hot.
I got really into chilies this year, so plot, it's mostly chilies. And at Acoma.
So at Acoma, anybody wants some chilies, come on over to Acoma, because we can't get rid of all these chilies.
They're hot.
Like
the one that the Trinidad Scorpion that Amy ate, you said it was 10 times as hot.
As a habanero.
I'm like, oh my gosh.
That one.
And a habanero, I don't even touch a habanero.
We brought some of those to the center the other day, some habaneros. Yeah. Well, and we also grew tomatillos.
Yeah. Oh, yes. That's good for salsa, too.
Yeah, we grew those, too.
So if someone wanted to get a plot over there at the community garden, Salud de El Jardín de Salud.
Yeah, Jardín de Salud.
Yeah, it's right there on... almost Tippecanoe and Third Street, right? But it's a little bit to the east of Third Street, right?
Or it's on Third Street. It's across the street from a SAC Health Clinic.
Okay, but the entrance is over a little bit. So you make
on Third Street.
Yeah, make a left on Third Street from Tippecanoe, and then head on. And then there's now when is it open? How would you get a plot? Like, how would you do that?
Yeah, opening the hours change all the time. Usually, if it's in the afternoon. I think with the exception of Saturday, it's open and people are there. And, honestly, that's something that's changed recently, like who you would actually talk to. So
but
I don't know.
You could go in there and get some phone numbers or whatever and talk. Yeah.
Everyone there is super friendly. It's definitely a great place, if you're looking for community, like that's a great place. They're all very friendly, very willing to help. If you don't know certain things about gardening, or like I've had a lot of people when I went there, I had somebody help me, like who knew more about drip irrigation than I do, help me set up a good system, and then I guess I paid it forward and helped others set up their drip irrigation.
Yes.
Yeah, it is honestly like a bunch of Legos. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is
and,
pretty much like Legos.
Once you get the hang of it, you can pretty much drip irrigate anything in your whole yard.
Yeah. And that's the way to go.
Yeah, it really does save water, and it saves time, too, because when you got to do it all by the hose, it can take some time, let me tell you.
Yeah.
They're growing sunflowers over there. They got a ton of fruit trees. They got the individual plots. It's really turning into a great urban garden right here in San Bernardino. Sponsored by La Melinda.
Yeah.
They sponsor the land. So everybody's involved in these things, and I just love to see gardens grow like this. It's great. Now, there's more community gardens. Now, Garcia Center has an incredible plot going on.
Yes,
so
they do.
You've been over there. Can you tell us a little bit about that one?
Yeah.
Under Jorge. He's just doing some good stuff over there. Yeah.
Yeah, they're all Jennifer Kane. They're all those great folks over there. Yeah,
they're doing awesome stuff there. I've got involved with composting there, and they do have a garden. I haven't quite started actually getting hands on with their garden yet, although I plan on it. But they, we're doing a lot. We have so much finished compost there. That's one of the places where there's just like two big mountains of pretty much ready to go compost.
And they're growing Samoan.
They have
taro.
Yeah, they have taro. It's the first time I've seen taro in a garden. Yeah, there's a group. I forget exactly what they're called, but it's a Samoan group.
Yeah, and they like I know that team. They're really good in the community overall, doing a lot of different things. So hopefully they'll be involved in our event on Festival on October 8th at Secum Lake, which will be really cool for the community. It's all about culture. So everybody's welcome to come, and maybe you can meet some of the people involved in some of these gardens and stuff. Just a little plug for that. I'll be doing history over there, team. So we'll be talking about the history of Secum Lake and stuff like that, but I'm not going to share it. But are you going to be at Festival,
Councilwoman? I am going to be at Festival.
I was just
sitting here trying to, I just couldn't remember the name of the bill where we're supposed to be, you know, have to now recycle our food scraps.
Oh, true.
Right? Because I had spoke to some folks over at the Garcia Center.
It's a statewide thing, right?
It is. And it's not a funded bill either. But we have to, you know, do our own composting. We have to recycle our food, but Birdtech is going to be the one picking it up, and not quite sure what they're going to be doing with it. Mm-hmm. But for the community to be able to recycle their
that'll be an interesting question maybe to ask.
I have already.
Because I have a few questions for them too, like maybe a little more cleanup around the roads and stuff, like not just when Valdivia asked you, but like, you know, we have some major throwaways that nearly need to be cleaned up in our area.
So that's AB 1826.
AB 1826.
And it's just basically, you know, we're gonna have to be the ones to put our food into a plastic bag that we have to buy, and then into the recycling bin. Originally we were going to have to have another bin, but I believe now the bag is going to be able to be put into the green bin. But nevertheless, that's
Or you can make your own, which I do at my house.
Or you can compost your own. And I just think that, you know, I know it's not for everybody, but we had even spoke about the community coming together and buying a truck or something to recycle, you know, our own. The food goes to the community, at least a nearby community, so that can help out the community gardens nearest to them. You know what I'm saying?
My great-grandma, moved to San Bernardino here in 1922. My mom always remembers her taking the coffee grounds and the eggshells and putting them in one area. And the tomatoes and things that would grow out of that area were incredible. So she always made sure that, you know, if I throw away some coffee grounds, she gets on my butt. Let me tell you.
And then this, lately I have been, because I saw online where my plants were at home were doing something really crazy. I'm like, why are you guys dying? What's going on? And so I started telling everybody in the house, save your banana peels. Because you put the banana peels in some water, and it's great fertilizer for your plants. So it's like everything that we eat is able to go right back into the earth, right back.
And feed more plants.
And feed more plants.
Yeah. That's a very important point. You don't always just have to throw it away, team. You can actually, you know, compost this stuff on your own. Now, I know not everybody has areas that can do that.
Or a desire.
Yeah, but you can have your own pots, and even on the smallest little patio. I grow a fig tree in a pot. I've been growing it for about 12 years, and it's at the point where it produces probably 25 to 50 figs every single year. It has two crops, the first crop and the second crop, and they get big. I mean, it's just like, it's just a 20-gallon pot.
And they were tasty.
Like I actually have about 10 fig trees, and Amy has a very good fig tree in her backyard. So that's the ones you got, the turkey ones.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Her tree produced massively. And this is what's so crazy about her tree. It's hard to kill a fig tree. So once you plant one, like, it was totally dead. It was totally dead. Like, and then some shoots came up about 2 years ago. Kept watering it, and the shoots actually now are as big as, like, you know, like almost 15 feet high, and they produced about 200 figs this year. So you can do this, team. You don't always have to have land. That's my main thing. You can do container gardening, and you know, I'm sure there's people out there that have grown tomatoes in those ups those upside down containers?
Yes.
And they were good.
Yes. And I also just think that it's very important for us to continue to educate scholars about what being a master gardener is all about.
Yes.
Right? That it's just a really a career field, a choice that they're not it's not presented to them. And so, and like, why not? Right? Somebody has to do it. And they won't find a connection if they don't have the opportunity to till the ground and then learn all of the science that is, you know, in part of growing food. I think that, you know, back in the day, a lot of things were trial and error, but here now we're able to learn more, and folks are being educated. I mean, to be a master gardener, you got to have a lot of knowledge.
And you can get it on your own, team. Like, there are books, but nowadays we don't have to use always books. Go on the internet, get on YouTube, and watch some videos. Like, you can learn to graft. That's where I learned to graft avocado trees, is on YouTube.
And I'm talking about actually becoming those certified so that you can be hired as a master gardener.
Yeah, UCR,
you
know, has an excellent program,
yes,
too.
Absolutely.
To be, if you want a special certificate. But if you want to be self-taught, you can go to a community garden, get a plot, and read and study this stuff. And the plant will let you know if you're doing it right or wrong. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Like, I do love garden. Now, there was one more community garden I forgot to mention. The Music Changing Lives.
Yes.
They have one over on 40th and Electric.
Yep.
Is that it?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. 40th and Electric.
Yeah. So, and there's a couple more. I'm sorry if I didn't mention your, but there, if you're interested in this.
Sisters We.
Right? Yeah, yeah, most definitely. I know that over at Music Changing Lives, they have brought the milk thistle. Is it milk thistle? Plants that bring in the milk, huh?
Milkweed.
Oh, yeah.
That bring the monarch butterflies twice a year.
Yeah,
so that's super impressive.
My garden, yeah. I used to grow everything, but the avocado trees got so big they shade it. So it's actually perfect for the milkweed.
There is something called milk thistle.
So just so you know, team, there is different types of milkweed. And you can get the native variety that's actually more healthy for our local Western monarchs.
Mm.
The Home Depot one will work. I'm not saying don't get it, right? If you can't find the other one, but there is native varieties that you can get at, like, the Parkland Nursery. Or is it Parkview?
Parkview
Nursery? Yeah, that's where we got our native, and it has longer leaves. And it's because milkweed is invasive. And what happens is once it produces a pod, it produces all these really fluffy seeds that blow in the wind, right? So you'd rather have those fluffy seeds be from a native plant that can just go in the wild and plant.
What else is milkweed for? Is it another milkweed for?
We'll have to figure it out. Like, things don't eat it in my backyard, so basically it's for the monarchs, and I think it's like a pretty exclusive relationship.
Mm.
But we want monarchs. They're beautiful.
Yeah,
I mean, and there used to be a huge migration of monarchs you've seen the ones that go to Mexico before.
Mm-hmm.
Those are from the eastern United States up into Canada and down into Mexico. But we have our own group of Western monarchs right here on this side in California and Oregon and Washington.
It was very shortly after he planted those Music Changes Lives, planted those, that he began to see a few monarch butterflies coming in.
They know, they can smell it. And you'll see you'll see the caterpillars on there. They're very beautiful. They're like white, black, and yellow. And you'll see them on there and you're like, wow, I'm growing my own monarch butterflies.
Yeah.
So you can do that too, team. If you can just put them in a pot too. And they're actually not that. I've seen them totally wilted, like really looking lame. Give them some water, they come right back. But if you have caterpillars on there, that will kill them. But they're pretty easy to grow. So if you want to grow those, and grow other flowers too.
You ever thought about becoming a beekeeper?
I had bees for a little while. I love it.
Did you?
Yeah. My plan is to get back to it as soon as possible.
Tell us about beekeeping, Kevin.
So beekeeping, I mean, it was a few years ago. I had a friend who... he was a carpenter who started getting into beekeeping, and his neighbors complained. Mm. And so he had like three beehives that he had built and already had hives in them. And he asked me to store them in my backyard, and in exchange for him basically teaching me how to do it. And it was really It's loads of fun. Like, before that, I'd maybe been stung by bees twice, and that changed a lot. Like, it is, you know,
dangerous.
Yeah, when you're new at it, you can get stung a lot. Like, some more experienced beekeepers, you'll see they stop wearing the suit and everything. And it's, yeah, that probably
takes years.
They can read
them good, right?
Yeah.
Like, did you have a smoker and all that?
Yeah, or? I would always use a smoker and had a full suit. And
this is bee smoke team.
Yeah,
not smoking Joe's.
Yeah, yeah. That's actually was a native. What Pacuma Tanoet from San Juan gave me that as a gift, so I keep it as a sacred object.
Oh, really?
It's kind of cool. But so beekeeping, there's lots of things you can do to be environmentally friendly,
yes,
to the flowers and plants, and then also to yourself. I mean, you can you can get mental health. Help with just taking care of a plant. It's weird how just, and then also there's bacteria and stuff in the soil that can be good for you in your body.
Absolutely.
And then eating your own vegetables. There's no pesticides.
Absolutely.
You know, all these good things. It's pretty awesome.
Wonderful opportunity for the community just to continue to educate scholars, and it's like a space where you can, a melting pot is created, because when we had Earth Day there, I mean, the three generations, like, people just gave, that was what they chose to do for Earth Day, like, let's go and work the earth together, and I just, you know, thought that was just remarkable.
Yeah,
that
was great.
And I am creating a day curriculum to go to our schools and to churches or whatever, where you can just, it's going to teach the kids how to grow something in the classroom or just right outside. And it may be, you know, Brussels
sprouts.
That's why we're
going over to Double A.
And if you need to do this too, team, it shouldn't be just us. If you're a good gardener, call up your school and say, hey, for career day, I want to say I'm retired and I do gardening. And they will bring you right in there to talk about that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. So you have to make yourself known. If you are a master gardener and you know what you're doing, or your grandpa taught you some good skills and stuff like that, you need to share them with your neighbors, too.
Or come on out to a Como on Tuesdays or Saturdays.
Yeah, help the kids.
And help the team.
But help me, please.
There's actually nothing better than having avocados during Christmas time. Let me tell you.
Really?
I take avocados, I give them to all the neighbors, all my Christmas things. Then you get ribs coming from this side, you get tacos coming from this side. I mean, it's a great way to show your neighbors that you love them, and the reciprocity that comes back is incredible.
It is.
Yeah, and everybody loves avocados. I've shared some kumquats with you.
I love kumquats.
Yeah, some loquats. Yeah. So like, that's another thing you guys could probably grow at Coma pretty easily, some loquats.
Yeah, or kumquats.
Yeah, loquats are drought tolerant. And they grow from seed to true, so that you can grow the same kind that you ate from. So if you eat a really sweet one, then you plant it. The same thing with your Stater Brothers seeds. I have Stater Brothers peach trees in my backyard from nectarines and peaches that I ate from Stater Brothers on 40th that were really good.
Wow.
And I planted them. 12 years later, they are producing incredible peaches. So you can grow stuff from, you don't have to go to Home Depot and get those. Now, if you go get a grafted tree from Home Depot, it will produce fruit faster. That's why people do that. So if you grow an avocado from seed, it does produce fruit in the future, but it grows faster if you do it from one that's already grafted. And that's because they take fruit-bearing wood from a tree that's older and put it on a good young root system, and that's why it's already prepared. It's already gone through the stages to produce.
Well,
fruit.
Even though we had, you know, that was where our avocado tree was not from, we didn't plant the seed, but it still did take like 2.5 years.
It would take some time,
And
but once they're like mine in my backyard, they're over 40 years old, they produce like 1,000 avocados, right?
Right.
Yeah. So then you can feed the whole community with avocados. And I feed
and
a lot of
people. And they're expensive.
Yes, they are.
Yeah, and that's the other thing is that just to be able to save that money, because food is high.
And if you go to some specialty spots, you can get the thin-skinned avocados. But the different varieties of avocados have different tastes.
They do.
So the Haas ones you normally get in the store are there because they travel well and they have a thick skin.
Mm-hmm.
And the thinner ones, they tend to, the skin tends to rub off if they get too ripe.
A little milkier,
but
a little
they're
softer.
Good.
They are.
Like my bacon avocados are some of the sweetest avocados you'll ever have once they're ripened on the tree. They'll fall down and splat. and they'll be kind of splatty, but I don't care. I'll just put them up in my mouth and squish the whole thing in my mouth. And I'm talking, these things are sometimes as big as your fist or as big as a Nerf football. Wow. So they can get huge.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So, you know, you can get a whole meal out of avocados. So,
is that year-round?
Not year-round. They're just starting to get to the size where we're testing them to see when they're younger on the tree and you pick them, they're a little waterier. But they're still good. But once they're fully ripened on the tree later on in December and January, oh my gosh. And then the haws, they extend all the way into June, usually.
Okay.
So my dad took different varieties of avocado to extend the harvest almost year-round. So we always have avocados, but the dang San Bernardino squirrels that have moved in are... they eat a lot more avocados than we do, let me tell you.
Yeah.
Little squirrels.
Those squirrels.
We have 5 minutes left. Could you mention a few more things that's going on in Acoma?
Let's see. So we just had our first Sankofa Saturday program, and it was filled with a lot of bustling scholars and parents that came out to see exactly what we do there. And so we shared some of our programs that we're going to be having, and then we're going to be meeting every single Saturday. And that's because Acoma is now providing after-school expanded learning on school campuses. So
how would a parent get their kid enrolled?
They could just go to info@acomaunitycenter.org. This past Saturday, we had Save Our Water that came out, and we had PC4EJ was there, and they have this curriculum that they're working with UCR and some researchers there, where scholars are going to be able to go there, and they're studying their water on campus. Their water in their home. So it's a whole water education curriculum
that
are so excited
right now,
about.
Yeah.
And so they began, and they were testing their water, some water in the room in their class this past Saturday. You should have seen the eyes lighting up. That's for our middle school and high school scholars. And
those are real world skills.
Real world skills.
People who do water testing can make big money doing it for fountains.
Absolutely.
Actually, San Manuel hires people to do that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. And this is what I was saying earlier, when we're talking about educating scholars on becoming master gardeners, now we're educating scholars on having a career in the water industry. And I think that that's phenomenal. So that's what we do at Acoma, is try to consistently broaden the minds and the awareness of our local scholars so that they know that the typical careers that are taught to them or shown to them that you can be, there are a ton of careers that they can be introduced to and pursue. So we have our documentary and our film club that we're so excited with that, and we're partnering with some other organizations that are coming in and then are choosing to support our scholars, teach them all that they can about writing, about film editing, critiquing film, and of course doing the actual behind the camera themselves, and photography. So just those type of careers that those aren't the ones, you know, normally chosen or taught inside of the school. We teach those at Acoma to broaden their worlds.
And team, I know we got the councilwoman on here, and you all want to hear. No, we were focusing on the city and stuff, but there is one. But yeah, there's one thing I do want to ask about the city. How do you like being a councilwoman, and how's it going so far?
Well, I'm approaching, my second year?
Yes.
And yes, it is quite challenging at times, but it is also rewarding a lot of times. So today, as I mentioned earlier, right, being able just to stop on the side of the road and tell this one company, thank you so very much for doing the work. Their faces light all up, and I tell them I'm the councilwoman for this area. And then I've just made their day just by pulling over and saying thank you. And I like to make sure that people, you know, who have jobs that we take for granted, know that they're appreciated.
We appreciate you, city workers.
That's
we do.
Right. We
yes.
appreciate you, Public Works Department, Park and Recreation Department, and everybody else that is out there every single day grinding to make the city better, and have to get back up and probably come back to that same location and find another mattress there or some trash that was littered in the same space that they picked it up the day before. That's hard work. And I just like letting them know I appreciate them. So I take the time time to pull over to the side of the road. Those are days, that's a good day for me.
And kid. That makes you feel good. And this should be inspiring to you kids out there and parents. If you want to be a council member, you know, go through the you're going to have to do a lot of walking.
Yeah, you got to do a lot of work prior to becoming a council member. But you can help the community. Already being involved in the community is what I suggest that everyone who has any aspirations of becoming a council member, already get your feet wet. Already be involved.
Or just a commissioner.
A commissioner, either way.
Fill out your application online at sanmarinocity.org. And you know, someone will call you.
Absolutely.
All right, team. Thank you so much, Councilwoman Kimberly Calvin, and my girlfriend's son, Kevin Head, the master composter.
Yes. The master gardener.
I had so much fun this show. It was excellent. And thank you, Eric. We appreciate you.
Thank you, Eric.
This is Robert Porter with the I Love San Bernardino County Radio
Porter.
Show, and we are out of here.
Talking, living the blues. I'm a blues loving man. From my soul into your hands, music makes you wanna dance. I'm a blues loving man. Saint, I'm the preacher, don't be late. I'm the blues man, let's make a deal. If you wanna walk and talk the blues, well, sell me your soul. I'm a blues loving man, from my soul into your hands.
Hey y'all, it's Mickey. Join me every Saturday night, 7 p.m. right here on KCA. We're slipping you and Mickey. A delicious cocktail of music you're not going to hear anywhere else. I promise. Like Funkadelic, LCD Sound System, Elliott Smith, maybe some Otis Taylor, Nina Simone. You never know what you're going to get. So tune in every Saturday night, 7 p.m. right here, KCAA. We're slipping you a Mickey.
Besides being founders of our republic, what did Thomas Jefferson and George Washington have in common? Answer? Hemp. America's founders were strong promoters of this extraordinarily useful agricultural crop, and both Jefferson and Washington grew it. The first draft of our Constitution was written on hemp paper, and as late as World War II, the government urgently pushed farmers to grow the crop as part of a Hemp for Victory program. So why are American farmers today prohibited from producing this patriotic, profitable, and pesticide-free plant? Political nuttiness. Most recently, in a frenzy of reefer madness, U.S. drug police decided that President Nixon's Controlled Substance Act of 1970 not only outlawed marijuana, but also its non-narcotic cousin, industrial hemp. If ignorance is bliss, they must have been ecstatic, yet their nuttiness remains the law of our land. The good news is that a wave of sanity is now wafting across America. In Colorado, for example, farmer Michael Bowman and Denver hemp advocate Linda Parker helped pass Amendment 64 in last fall's election. It legalizes personal pot use, which got all the media attention, but it also directs the legislature to set up a program for, quote, the cultivation, processing, and sale of industrial hemp. Bowman now hopes to be the first American farmer in generations to plant a legal crop of it, hoping to do so on April 30th, the 80th birthday of family farmer hero and hemp champion Willie Nelson. The red state of Kentucky is also on the move. Its Republican Ag Commissioner, backed by its Chamber of Commerce, is campaigning to legalize hemp farming there. And Kentucky Senator Rand Paul is co-sponsoring a national bill with Oregon Democrat Ron Wyden to take hemp off the controlled substance list. This is Jim Hightower saying, to help spread this seed, go to votehemp.com.
Did you know that every dollar you put into a piece of real estate makes you money five ways? Cash flow, money in your pocket each month. Equity capture, the thousands of dollars you create when you have the right team and buy the right property using the right map. Appreciation, real estate doubles in value about every 10 years. Equity buildup, renters pay down your mortgage each month. And finally, the tax advantage. We pay almost no taxes on our cash flow and capital gains. These are the five ways we make money in real estate, which is why real estate accounts for more millionaires in the world today than any other investment vehicle. You should have some real estate in your portfolio. To learn how, attend one of our free workshops. Call 1-866-971-8970 or go to getmymapnow.com and register for the next available workshop. That's 866-971-8970 or getmymapnow.com.
Bob Vila here with my home improvement tip of the day. Medium density fiberboard, MDF for short, can be a cheaper, more stable alternative to plywood if used in the right way. MDF is made from wood scraps that are broken down into fine fibers, mixed with binders such as glue, then formed into sheets using high temperature and pressure. Most home centers carry 4x8 sheets, usually half or 3/4 inch thick. MDF is often a bit less expensive than plywood. It holds its shape, and you can use it for shelving, cabinets,